Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Live from the NASDAQ market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Big tech on deck. Meta, Microsoft, Alphabet, Tesla all set to report this week. But after the stock's recent sell-off, will the results give them a boost or more cause for concern? We're going to talk it out. Plus, a Bitcoin bounce. The halving has happened and prices are back on the rise. So can gains keep coming? And what's next for the crypto space? Our Bitcoin baller BK is here to break it down. And a deal under fire. The FTC moving to block Tapestry's acquisition of Michael Kors' parent Capri. Why the move? And what does it mean for the two companies' futures? I'm Courtney Reagan, and this evening for Melissa Lee, coming to you live from the Studio B here at the NASDAQ market site. On the desk tonight, we have Carter Worth, Courtney Garcia, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. And so we're going to start with the sigh of relief for stocks. After last week's tech-led sell-off, the S&P 500 surging nearly 1% to snap a six-day losing streak. The Dow gaining 250 points, the NASDAQ leading the charge up 1.1%. Markets did close off their highs of the session, though, and are still well below their recent records. The S&P down over 4% in the past month, and the NASDAQ down nearly 6% in that same period of time. All 11 S&P 500 sectors were in the green today, with the notable standout, NVIDIA, leading that group higher, up more than 4% for its best day in over a month. But of course, this comes after Friday's 10% sell-off. In fact, all of the so-called Magnificent Seven stocks, with the exception of Tesla, finishing the day higher. This all happening as we get ready for big tech earnings kickoff, Meta reporting Wednesday after the close, Microsoft and Alphabet following suit on Thursday, Amazon and Apple on the docket for next week. So how should investors interpret market moves ahead of these prints? Guy, I'm going to start with you. Welcome back.
Thanks,
I know you were
Gordon.
Off for a little bit. Was today just sort of more of a reprieve? Is this a FOMO trade? You got to be in before you hear the reports. What do you think?
Yes, probably a little bit of all of those. It's great to have you on board. I think, look, the market six straight days lower. Technically, I think the S&P traded down to and held the 100-day moving average. Carter can wax poetic about that. And the fact that nothing happened over the weekend, thank God, geopolitically, I think that was a bit of a reprieve as well. But I don't think we're out of the woods by any stretch, and earnings are going to go a long way in trying to figure that out. I'll say this quickly. Amazon next week, if you put up a chart and go back to November of 2021, you will see a textbook potential double top. So they better blow it out. And Microsoft this week at 31 times earnings, down maybe 7% from its all-time high. That stock really has to prove itself as well. So I'm clearly not as enthusiastic going into earnings as other people might be.
Yeah, I'd say proving it is really going to be really important over the next week or so, because, again, I look at Netflix and how it responded to the quarter that they reported, which was great on the subscriber number, and really, down 9% or so on Friday and a follow through today. And I say to myself, that is a matter of expectations, right? And so a lot of investors were like pricing this in, like looking a quarter out, two quarters out. Is this as good as it gets? And I look around today and I see the reaction. You know, the NASDAQ was up a little more than 1%. The S&P was up a little less than 1%. I see Apple basically flattish on the day. I see Google, which was up 1.5%. I see Amazon up 1.5%. But I saw Meta, down on the day or flat-ish or something like that. I just don't see a lot of performance. Microsoft was up, a 0.5% or something like that. So if the biggest names in the market that led us up for the better part of this year are the ones that are going to actually have the biggest S&P earnings contribution, right? Like, I think that at some point in the not-so-distant future, I think investors are like, this might be as good as it gets in this cycle. As we get through like Q1 and Q2 earnings, we have a strong dollar, we have higher rates, we have commodity input prices much higher. And I just kind of say to myself, you know what? Great performance this year. Maybe you take a little bit of a breather. Last year, from the July highs to the October lows, we had 11% peak to trough decline, and we're only, 5% or so?
It's nothing. I mean, the give back is very minor in terms of duration and magnitude. We know that from the October low, a six-month move of almost 32% for the NASDAQ 100, so we're down 7-8. One way to say the headlines is it was up big today, right? Mm-hmm. That seems. But the real headline is From its peak as of Friday's close, the NDX was down 8%, and now it's down only 7%, meaning, okay, we bounced 1%. It's meaningless. The presumption is that this correction has more room to run.
Even though we're expecting first quarter earnings growth, Courtney, for the Magnificent 7 in aggregate to be 40% compared to the rest of the S&P 500 to be down 3%.
Yeah, and I think what you're seeing right now is this rotation has really started, right? I already talked about this earlier in the year, but then they thought, oh, no, rates are coming down. Everybody continued to go into your growth sectors. But now with rates being higher, everything that's going on geopolitically, you're actually seeing how quickly things change. And suddenly your value is actually outperforming your growth. You're seeing things like energy, things like gold are outperforming as people are going to those defensive sectors. This week is going to be that show me week. We're actually seeing all of the big tech sectors are going to be reporting this week. We're getting PCE numbers out Friday. So everything I think people have been waiting for this week, if that value continues to outperform growth, I think that's likely going to continue. Or if we just see earnings this week and people are right back in, that could just be the end of it. But this is the week that I think is going to really tell you.
Dan, you also said it's a show me story for some of these stocks. Yeah. So what do you want to hear about? More AI? Any partnerships with NVIDIA? I mean, what's the magic sauce that's going to turn you a little bit more bullish than what I was hearing you say?
Yeah, I mean, NVIDIA is a really interesting. They don't report until the end of May.
Right.
I mean, if you think about the customer concentration that they have right there, it's Amazon, it's Meta, it's Google, and it's Microsoft. They're about 40% of their revenues, right? And so this is going to be actually really important. I look at, again, I'm going back to what I saw today. I saw NVIDIA down 10% on Friday, but up 4.5% today. This is a $2.2 trillion market cap company. If Microsoft doesn't speak to higher enterprise spend or higher R&D spend, right, if we don't hear that across the board from some of these big customers, the semi trade then is over. And it's over already because if you look away from NVIDIA, Intel has not really been participating. AMD is down 35% from its March 8th highs, right? We're starting to see some massive bifurcation. So this semi trade is just stuck in NVIDIA. So if some of their customers this week or over the next week and a half or so don't confirm the 80% expected EPS growth this year, the 80% expected sales growth this year, then NVIDIA is coming down too. And that's, to me, the last thing that's holding together the NASDAQ, at least at this stage of the game. Now, that being said, it's not too frequent we look up and look at the S&P outperforming the NASDAQ, not at least that I can remember it in the last few years. That's going on right now. So it tells you the importance of these really, you know, top-heavy names.
But AMD had a good performance today.
Yeah, who cares? It's done. It's over. I mean, the stock's broken. I mean, it literally is. It went up for no good reason, and now it's going down for a lot of good reason.
Also, it was up the most, right? It was up about 150% sure. from its October low. So there's proportionality to the give back. The 37% is having to do with how much it outperformed on the way up.
Mm. When you look at the patterns of some of these names, the Magnificent Seven in particular, and I guess the ones that are reporting this week, Carter, what are your expectations? Any clues?
Well, I mean, one thing to point out is that there's been no outperformance on the part of the Qs for more than 3 years. Mm. We might have some charts that annotate that, but if you were to go to the prior high, that's 4 January 2022, and watch the performance, you have the NASDAQ draws down 37%, the S&P 27, and they're even money over 3 years. So on a risk-adjusted basis, the Qs have been a disaster. You see it on the screen there. That is a relative performance chart. All we've done is recouped all of the relative losses over the past 3 years. And if they don't deliver, which is, I think, Dan's implication, and they pull the ASML-type move, we will have a lower market.
What would you advise, Courtney, if folks want to get in on this Magnificent Seven trade? They haven't gotten there yet. Is it smart to do it ahead of some of these earnings reports?
I mean, we absolutely still have exposure there. I don't think it's something you want to be out of by any means, but it's something I'm not chasing right now. That's not where I'm actively adding money. I'm definitely still adding money to things like banks that have actually been outperforming, your value companies, your energy. Like, that is where we've been adding all year. I'm still continuing to do that with new money, but I wouldn't get out of it. I would still make sure you have the exposure. I mean, if you don't have any, I mean, it's never too late to get in. I just wouldn't be chasing it either.
Mm. And when we're talking about the patterns, obviously today felt a little bit better than Friday, of course, if you're bullish. But how much really stock can you put in the moves that we saw here today? I mean, just think about FOMO, guys, so much.
Yeah. No, I think you're right to think about that. And I think some of it's a relief. Again, technically, we traded down to levels where we should have bounced. It makes a lot of sense. Again, the fact that the weekend was relatively quiet makes sense. But for me, Court, I think the die was cast. And we talked about this that day on March 8th when you saw a huge reversal, specifically in NVIDIA and a couple of other names. Since that day, although the broader market went higher, NVIDIA has never reclaimed those levels. Obviously, you mentioned AMD. Mm. I mean, quickly about AMD, that stock reported, I think it was January 30th, think that day it closed in the 180s. It traded lower on the back of earnings and then was off to the races. We're now significantly lower than we were their last earnings release. So some of these things are seemingly breaking down, not because they're bad companies, but because the valuations just got too excessive, in my opinion.
Interesting stuff. I mean, meantime, the FTC, though, also moving to block Tapestry's $8.5 billion acquisition of Capri Holdings. This news just out here, a deal that is looking to combine three close competitors, Tapestry's, Coach, and Kate Spade brands, and Capri's Michael Kors brand. Of course, there are others, but those are the biggest three. Tapestry responding to the agency's move, saying, quote, "There is no question that this is a pro-competitive, pro-consumer deal, and the FTC fundamentally misunderstands both the marketplace and the way in which consumers shop." CNBC.com reporter Gabrielle Fonrouge joins us now for more. It's great to see you, Gabby. I know obviously this has been rumored for some time. Now we have confirmation officially from the FTC that they are suing to block this deal. What's your initial reaction?
Great to see you, Courtney. And my initial reaction is this is putting cold water on big mega mergers that banks might be trying to get through. I mean, this is not the first time that the FTC under President Biden has blocked a merger of this size. Block some other ones. And what does this mean for deal making moving forward? I mean, when this deal was first announced, all of the bankers that I spoke to, all of my sources in the industry, no one expected this to be one that the FTC would want to make an example out of. And when we started to see some inklings come out about this over the last week that they were considering bringing a lawsuit, I mean, there was a lot of shock in the industry, you know? So what does this mean for deals moving forward? And also just a lot of surprise that this is what this FTC is up to.
Yeah, I think I was pretty surprised as well that this was one that they went after. But then it seems like the market warmed up to the idea because stocks, both these stocks in reaction are sort of hardly moving. So I think many people knew that this was coming down the pike. I find it very interesting when you would look at some of their partners. So some of the wholesale relationships they have with some of these bigger department stores that, from my reporting and probably yours as well, we're looking forward to this deal. It sort of makes things a little bit more simple for them when they're dealing with the vendor relationships. And they still saw them as very independent brands because many consumers, I don't believe, really understand what parent company owns each of these brands.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Consumers aren't thinking about Capri owning Jimmy Choo or Versace. And when you think that they also own Michael Kors, you would actually probably be surprised that they own all of those brands. And, you know, you mentioned the wholesalers, and that's kind of a big part of this, right? Because you have Capri's Michael Kors, mid-tier luxury. You have Tapestry's Coach and Kate Spade, mid-tier luxury. All three of these brands are heavily present in mid-tier department stores like Macy's, but then they also have a huge presence in TJ Maxx and, you know, TJX companies. And, you know, in that case, that's what the FTC is saying, that it's going to kind of take away some of the competition. Obviously, Capri and Tapestry, before they decided to join up, they were watching very closely each other's prices, what kind of products they were pointing out. And that's that competition that the FTC wants to see. So their concern is, especially in the, you know, mid to lower tier where some of these brands end up when they get oversold and overly discounted, there's going to be less competition. And that could also be a concern for TJX as well, because you want to be able to offer these items at the right type of price for the type of customer that goes to these places, you know, because they would have a monopoly on these three brands, not to use that language, but that's the FTC's language. You know, would they still be able to offer that competitive pricing? Would the TJX customer, would the Macy's customer still want to buy these brands from those locations?
I mean, here's the thing. This is tax dollars not at work. I mean, honestly, if you were the head of the commission, your team came to you with, this is what we're going to work on. I mean, they regulate milk for a reason and lights for a reason. Handbags and shoes, nobody cares. The whole thing is, what's the market cap of the two companies? $15 billion? I mean, Tesla traded $15 billion today. Mm-hmm. This is absurd.
Yeah, it does really surprise me again, because when we look at these companies, to me, the brands sort of can stand on their own in the consumer's mind. They're so independent. And so putting together the two parent companies, to me, does not, you know, lower the competition. But, you know, what I guess I'm not the FTC.
Yes.
Gabrielle, thank you so much for joining us here last minute on this breaking news. Appreciate it very much. Gabrielle Fonrouge from CNBC.com. Guy, make you interested at all in either
Those companies? Two stocks, no, and you've talked about this. The market is trading as if they've been expecting this. It's doing nothing. And if you look at Tapestry real quick, we're up against levels we last traded, I think, in the fall of 2021. The one that sticks out, and we've talked about on the show, TJX just defies, I don't want to say logic, it actually, though, defies some of the other retailers. This is TJX's world, and at 20 times earnings, probably twice the valuation of those other two companies we just talked about, you can actually still make a compelling case. They don't report until, I think, middle of May, May 22nd. Here's a name you want to stay with, Intel earnings on May 22nd.
One of the most fascinating names in retail to me, TJX. It's a fascinating company. Well, coming up, gold loses its shine. We are charging into the Tesla trade ahead of results and Bitcoin post-halving, how the cryptocurrency is faring and where it could be heading next. But first, TikTok nearing midnight as lawmakers prepare to vote on a divest or ban bill. What will it mean for the app's future and how much could it cost the U.S. economy? More on that when Fast Money returns.
You're watching Fast Money here on CNBC. We'll be right back.
Canva presents stories to keep you up at night. It was an ordinary work day until
the Singapore presentation is at
3 a.m.
The office was shocked.
That's when we sleep.
Maya made it less scary with Canva.
I'll just record my presentation so Singapore can watch it anytime.
Record and present anytime with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Time may be running out for TikTok. The Senate set to vote on a bill tomorrow that would force the app's owner, ByteDance, to sell the social media platform or face a ban in the U.S. That bill, part of a package that would also provide aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, was approved by the House over the weekend. For more on what's next for TikTok, let's go to Julia Boorstin. Hi, Julia. Good to see you.
Hey, Courtney. That's right. TikTok is fighting this legislation. And if the bill is signed as expected, TikTok is expected to fight it in court. The company is saying that a ban would, quote, trample the free speech rights of 170 million Americans, devastate 7 million businesses, and shutter a platform that contributes $24 billion to the U.S. economy annually. Bernstein saying that if a TikTok ban does happen, then a potential $16 billion in 2025 ad revenue could be up for grabs, and that Meta would be a big winner from a potential TikTok ban, as it has the highest overlap in TikTok creators, and Instagram and Facebook are most similar to TikTok in terms of product features. And with Americans spending more time on TikTok than any other social platform, in addition to the benefit to Meta, YouTube and also Snap could also see a boost in terms of user engagement as well as ad revenue. Bernstein projecting that if TikTok is banned, Snap's revenue would grow 37% next year versus 14% with no ban. YouTube's would grow 23%, 10 percentage points higher than without a ban, while Meta's ad revenue would grow 18% rather than 13%. So, Courtney, some really strong projections here about how all these other players would benefit, but this is still quite a ways off.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand this could actually take years before it really went into place, even if things go the way we think it might tomorrow. Julia, thank you so much for the update on that. I mean, Dan, that's pretty interesting. $16 billion in ad revenue potentially up for grabs.
Well, here's the flip side of that. All right. And okay. I know this is something you track pretty closely. So Temu and Shein.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What if they stop advertising here? Right. And so like
I've been trying to figure out what this means. For
it could net out a bunch of it. I think, you know, Snap would probably be the biggest beneficiary in the near term just because of their revenue base. It would just be like that much more impactful. But, you know, again, this is not going to happen until after the election anyway. And so I just don't think it's something that a lot of investors in Meta, Google, or Snap are going to be pricing in anytime soon.
What do you think? I mean, Courtney, does this up the ante for any company that is operating with a connection to China here in the United States, even if it's an Alibaba, it's an e-commerce? So they're talking about privacy, but I mean, you're giving them information when you're ordering from Alibaba, right, to your personal details. I mean, does this put other companies potentially at risk?
I mean, it absolutely does, right? I mean, the question is this actually going to go through legislation? And then, yeah, where does the buck stop from there? So I think you bring up a really good point. You know, it's interesting it comes in this year, which is going to be such a political football. I mean,
totally.
If you're trying to get the Gen Z vote and you take away TikTok, I mean, I don't know. don't know if that's really what they're trying to do with that, which is interesting. I honestly don't know if that'll go through. If they're really going to see a ban of TikTok, I think it would kind of be one of those like political suicide things that's happened. But that is the argument of who's it going to benefit. So I know we're talking about, okay, it could benefit Snapchat because they have the younger demographic just like TikTok does. I would argue actually Google will benefit because they have YouTube, which is definitely going to benefit them, probably more so even than Meta. But honestly, I think this is all just like a little too soon to talk about. I don't know if this is actually going to go through. I think it would be, you're giving up votes to do this. I mean, realistically.
Fair enough. Guy, what do you think? Too early to talk about the beneficiaries?
No, I don't think so at all. But, you know, I think former President Trump will absolutely use this as a campaign, one of the things to campaign on. President Biden is taking away your TikTok, you know, look at me, I'm all for Facebook is getting more powerful. They're trying to help the, you know, those tweets are coming or whatever platform they use. Those are coming to a theater near you, but not the ones that win. Apple's in the crosshairs here, without question. I mean, this, we're thumbing our nose clearly at the Chinese, justified or not. They will retaliate in some way, and I've said this for a while. Apple finds himself with a bullseye on their back, and the last couple months it's been trading that way.
Yeah, that is a really interesting point. Of course, I've been thinking about Temu and Shein, but Apple's a good point, too. Well, coming up, not all that glitters. Gold notching its worst day since February of 2023, so over a year. But after such a run-up this year, where could the yellow metal be heading? We're going to debate that next. Plus, shares of Tesla rolling downhill this year. Can anything from tomorrow's conference call cause the stock to do a U-turn? Never know with Mr. Musk. We are plugging in and checking the charge in the options pits ahead. You're watching Fast Money live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Gold dropping almost 3% today, its worst day since February of 2023, over a year. The safe haven trade losing steam as worries ease over the conflict between Israel and Iran. The precious metal now negative over the past 2 weeks. Nikki Shields thinks the weakness is temporary, however. She's the head of metal strategy at MKS PAMP. Nikki, thanks so much for joining us here today. So this big drop today, you think it's just temporary?
Look, I think you got to put things in perspective, right? And since the October 7th Hamas attack, we've been up in a straight line, $600. So, yes, it's been a pretty, you know, deep one-day retraction. And I do think geopolitics did sort of kick things off into frothy territory. But this is so much more than geopolitics. What's happening in the gold move, it's happened against a backdrop where we've gone from 7 Fed cuts to 3 to 2. We've had a very strong dollar. And you've had, you know, geopolitics sure simmering, but real interest rates are sitting at plus 2%. So this is a regime shift that I think gold is internalizing over the last few months. And geopolitics is just that sort of takes it into sort of over frothy territory.
So what's the next catalyst then if you've got so many potentially at play?
I mean, I do think we go higher, but ultimately, you know, 2,500, but it's not going to be a straight line like it was the past 6 months. I do think a healthy correction is in play because I think you're going to get a lot more people involved who have missed this move. A lot of people, ETFs are not, have not really subscribed. We talk about strong physical demand, but it's not firing on all 4 out of 5 cylinders. So I do think some sort of correction, 2,200, and it just will re-rate to a less bullish trajectory going forward.
It's interesting. We talk about this as a safety trade. I think it's more than that as well, and it's great. Yeah. You're the best person to have on today. But as we've talked about, 2022, central banks bought almost $70 billion worth of gold, record at the time. They did pretty much the same last year. They're probably on pace this year to do similar. So this is a central bank story probably more than anything else. Thoughts on that?
Absolutely, and I think it's, this is what makes this time different. And you're so wary of saying that in anything in financial markets, like, why is this time different? But this time is different versus all the other big gold rallies because you've had physical and central bank buying that is coming in and they're increasingly less price sensitive. Like they've been in the 2000, 11 gold spike in 2020. And so it does have a lot more legs and sort of a higher core foundation.
What is your base case for what the Fed is going to do? And then how does that track with gold? You sort of mentioned it at the top.
My base case is, you know, it was three cuts. It's probably going to dial down to two for sure. But at the end of the day, does it really matter when gold still rallied and we went down from seven cuts to two cuts, right? So they're going to cut this year. I think they'll be constrained to cut. Two reasons. One, elections. And secondly, it's interest rate control. Like it's so it's they'll cut. And, you know, I think gold will just price in a less bullish trajectory if they're not cutting as much as we expected.
What about silver?
Very bullish silver, because I think if you play on that sort of U.S. exceptionalism theme, green revolution, it's taking a little bit from your sort of Bitcoin crowd who kind of sort of full up on that. I think it's both a gold proxy and a reflation proxy. And let's talk about the green revolution. And I think it fits into all of that. So very undervalued versus gold.
Awesome stuff. Nikki, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Carter, what do you make about gold?
Well, the interesting one is silver, of course, and it's so far off its all-time high. It had the high in 1980, the Hunt brothers, when they tried to corner the market, and then again, it made a double top in 2011, and that's at $50 an ounce, and we're sitting here at half that. So the beta trade, it's pejorative when people say poor man's gold, but silver is the interesting one here.
Courtney, do you think gold has a place in a portfolio today?
I do, but I agree with you guys here. It's been a central bank story. And I think the question is, investor demand has actually been going down since about 2022. So like, what is going to bring that in going forward without, I mean, hopefully we don't see more geopolitical uncertainty. I think that's the thing that brings investor demand in, which like hopefully we don't see. So we do have it as part of an inflation hedge, which it hasn't even been working as much of an inflation hedge as it has historically. I do think it has a piece in your portfolio. I'm not jumping in with 2 feet, but it's been doing fantastic here. And I really wouldn't have seen that over the last couple months.
Dan, there was a really big move today. I mean, should we buy into anything that...
I would say this, you know, Carter, you know, there's some technical levels. I mean, Nikki just said, you know, 2200, that seems like the last flag that it made before it went up 200 points. That breakout level at 2100, that was a massive base. Is that a multi-year sort of base? If you're a measured move sort of person, 1600 to 2100, you check back to that, and then you get to her $2,500 target if there's probably a reasonable sort of thing. So I would buy it technically for that. I don't see it melting away the way we saw it a couple times in the last few years after a big move because the things that Guy just said. I think central banks are in there.
Right, it's a proportion. It's nothing. I mean, the dip, 1,600 an ounce to 2,400 an ounce. Yeah. This is $100 an ounce. It's what you want if you're bullish something that's in an uptrend are dips and pullbacks. It resets something that's overdone. That allows you to go higher still.
Fair enough. Coming up, Tesla results on deck. The EV maker set to report earnings tomorrow after the bell. After a really rough start to the year, investors are hoping for a charge in this trade. What to expect and the options action in the name. That's coming up next. Plus, the Jarmaster is hitting the technicals in the finance space. The brokerages, banks, and payment stocks on his radar. Don't go anywhere. Fast Money, back right after this.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks rebounding after last week's big sell-off. The Dow climbing more than 250 points, have been up as much as 460. The S&P gaining nearly 0.9%, and the Nasdaq jumping more than 1%. The S&P and Nasdaq both snapping six-day losing streaks. Well, China Tech jumping today too. The KWEB ETF, that's up more than 4%, looking to get into positive territory for the year. Shares of Pinduoduo leading the charge, up more than 9%. Matterport stock, that's up nearly tripling, I should say, news that the 3D data company is being bought by real estate data company CoStar. The deal valued at an estimated $1.6 billion. And some notable stock streaks on the losing side, onsemi, Arista Networks, and GE Healthcare, all on seven-day losing streaks. Domino's Pizza notching its eighth down day in a row. That makes me hungry. On the positive side, Starbucks locking in its sixth day of gains after its own rough patch in early April. Some after-hours action brings you shares of Cadence Design. That's dropping despite a beat on the top and bottom line when they reported those results. But the second quarter guidance did come in light. And Ford shares driving higher ahead of their results on Wednesday, up more than 6% today. Its biggest gain since December. So turning now to the Tesla slump, another car maker, the EV maker, shares caught in a seven-day funk, tying the longest losing streak last hit in December of 2022. Today's move coming after the company cut the price of its most popular vehicles and driver assistance system by as much as $2,000. Tesla set to report earnings after the bell tomorrow. The company already said Q1 deliveries were down nearly 9% from a year ago, its first year-over-year drop since 2020. This name has really been sort of stuck in this downward trend. Carter, as you watch the technicals on this chart, what is it telling you?
I mean, of all the factors that have been studied in markets, relative strength, relative performance, momentum come up aces every time. Mm. I mean, they're not infallible, but it's what works and it's reliable more than any other thing. And what do we know? This is poor relative strength. Mm. It's bearish price-volume correlation, and it's why they call them often value traps. I would hardly use the word value, but a stock, currency, commodity index that's in an established downtrend, it is usually right just to resist the temptation to buy.
And Courtney, I mean, this stock obviously gets so much attention, but now fundamentally, from a fundamental side, I should say, they're dropping prices on some of these models. I mean, does that worry you about the trajectory of the company? So even more than the technicals, what's actually going on internally?
It absolutely does. And especially what's happening in China is they're in this price war right now. And the question is, are they going to be profitable in China with how much they're having to reduce prices? They're having to do that here in the U.S. also. They're also cutting marketing spend, which also, again, is not a good sign for where they are going forward. And you're just seeing this consumer demand shift. Like in China, they have too many competitors. Here in the U.S., people are going towards hybrids instead of EVs. So what that means for their demand story, I think, is the question. I do think there's a stock you don't want to chase, but people who like Tesla, they continue to love it. They've put $5.9 billion in individual investors into Tesla, despite the fact it's gone down so much. So I think people are going to continue to chase this. I wouldn't do so. I would make sure I would stay on the sidelines here, but you are continuing to see people chase into that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a favorite stock of so many. People love to hear what Elon Musk is going to say. Dan, ahead of the results, what would you be doing here?
Nothing. I mean, listen, it's a hard press right now. It's down 20% just in the last month. It's down, 65%. From those all-time highs. I mean, the series of lower highs and lower lows over the last 2 years, people often ask, why do you look at charts? And I'm just excluding you over there. The technicals have been leading the fundamentals in this story for 2 years. And so that's one of the reasons why I listen to a whole heck of a lot of what he has to say, because it's been literally pretty simple. And then if you think back over the last 4 quarters, this stock, the day after earnings, has sold off on average 10%. So anytime they have the opportunity to talk about their business currently and what they see, 4 times over the last year, the stock has sold off 10% the next day. Right here, given how weak this stock has been of late, I mean, it's really hard. I mean, there's got to be something they could say. There has not been a good comment out of this company or, anything in months.
Early last year, when they being Tesla, told us it was trough in terms of margins. Trough margins, it was going to reaccelerate. The market rewarded them. The stock basically doubled, went from 150 to 300 over the course of the next few months, which was a remarkable move. We've entirely round-tripped that. And you said this is the stock that everybody loves. I mean, if you think about it, Dan just said it. I mean, this stock is 65% off its all-time high on a broader market that until last week has gone nothing but go straight up. So you can love it all you want, but the stock has been a disaster now for the better part of 3 years. I don't think you press to the downside. I think you're looking for an entry level, but I think the entry level is a lot lower than where we are right now.
Oh, really interesting stuff. Well, let's see what the options market is betting on in this name. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. The options market is implying a move of about the 10% that Dan just referenced. Puts were outpacing calls today. It was actually basically the at-the-money puts that were the most active. I think there are some ways to play it, and a couple numbers I am sort of thinking about and looking to. First of all, just with respect to the valuation question on where you would want to enter it, this was kind of the thing that I think Guy was saying. It's substantially lower. The street was looking for $367 a share for full year next year. That would represent better than 30% year-on-year growth. I don't think they're going to get that number because you cannot see rising EPS if your unit sales are going down and your margins are going down at the exact same time. And with respect to China, it's BYD that they're competing with. BYD did about 3 million cars over the same period. Tesla did about 1.8. And they're able to produce these things at a lower price. So if you're not basically gaining a foothold in the biggest market for EVs, that's going to be a challenge. The Cybertruck being recalled is part of the problem. But even if it wasn't recalled, that was going to present a problem because it wasn't going to take on things like ICE cars like the F-150, for light-duty trucks. So they really have a tough row to hoe here. But if they do manage to get down to, you know, call it $110 or so, and they are going to keep better than $3 a share in EPS, that might be an interesting area. I think the way to play it with options, I want to sell these high-priced options that expire at the end of this week. I was looking at selling both a calendar call spread and a calendar put spread. We sometimes call that a strangle swap, buying a longer dated strangle and then selling the nearer dated one against it. And I'm using that $10 implied move to basically set those prices, looking at selling the 120 or 125 level strike on the downside, and then maybe the 155s or 160s on the upside. So you're selling the near dated calls and puts, and then buying ones that are further out in time. You want to capture not just this earnings with the options that you're buying, but the next one too. This is a story that's going to play out over some time. I think this is the way you want to play this one.
Interesting stuff. I always learn new strategies, Mike. Thank you very much for that. We will see what happens when Tesla reports. Well, coming up, the Chartmaster is taking on the banks. Check out Schwab at a fresh 52-week high. Do the technicals tell the tale of more gains ahead? Well, we'll draw those lines so you can see it. You got to stick around. That's coming up next. Plus, Bitcoin is having a moment, up nearly 5% already since Friday's event. We'll bring in BK to help break down the bullish drivers behind this cryptocurrency. Fast Money will be right back. Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Charles Schwab popping over a percent today. The stock on a steady climb since last week's earnings report. Schwab nearly recovering all of its losses since the collapse of SVB in March of last year. So where's it going from here? Well, for a finer look at financials, let's turn to the chart master. Carter, what are you seeing in Schwab?
Well, just as you've characterized a steady climb, we're going to look at Schwab and then American Express. Let's get right to it. So four identical Schwab charts. And you'll see here the first, of course, has no lines, no drawings, no annotations, no judgment. Let's put some lines in. Second iteration, this is the definition of converging trend lines. And you'll note, of course, in the next iteration, how precise the stock is in relation to those lines. It touches it to the penny, to the penny, to the penny, over and over and over. This is a very annoying to the CFA Society, the Harvard Business School, and to the Federal Reserve Bank. But guess what? It's how things work more often than not. Final chart, do we break out from this formation? That's the arrow that I've drawn, and that's my thinking. In terms of American Express, obviously, has had some very good action of late. Let's start out with the fact that since 1980, it has more than doubled the performance of the S&P. So a great franchise, to be sure. But drilling down to the here and now, this is going back about 30 years, and we're up against the internal trend line that's been in effect since the dot-com peak. And then finally, more up close and personal, the here and now chart. We're far above the 150-day moving average. I think if you have it, you trim it, you sell calls, you buy a risk reversal, you do something rather than just staying blindly long.
Guy, I'm going to toss it up to you. What do you make of these charts?
So if you put that chart with the lines, the downtrend line, Carter's probably right, but let the price be your guide here. I'd rather buy it on a breakout above, call it 76, than to try to buy it now, because here you're right up against resistance. With that said, the quarter is okay, but the price targets are anywhere between 75 and 80 bucks. People are not looking for all that much. So I'd rather buy the breakout above 76-ish than to buy it right here. Somewhat counterintuitive, but that's how I'd play it.
All right. Well, coming up, crypto's glass looking half full. Bitcoin ticking higher since completing its latest halving. Now, that was on Friday. So what will it mean for the future of the cryptocurrency? The Bitcoin baller, Brian Kelly, joins the traders on set. And here's a sneak peek at the Cramer Cam. Jim's chatting exclusively with the CEO of Barrick Gold. Catch that full interview at the top of the hour on Mad Money. Fast Money, though, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin on the rise today after the cryptocurrency completed its fourth halving on Friday, which slashes the rewards paid to miners in half. The halving helps generate a scarcity effect for Bitcoin, slowing the rate at which coins are issued. It also could help generate big gains. In the 9 months after the last halving, which was in 2020, Bitcoin's price soared more than 450%. That's according to Coinmetrics. Joining us now to talk about the effects of the halving on all things crypto is our resident Bitcoin aficionado, Brian Kelly. It's great to have have you here.
Good to
be
here.
So what do you expect? Are we going to see another 450% rise after this halving, or does the effect sort of dissipate each time?
So I think it's certainly the halving effect is going to dissipate. If you talk about how many dollars into the market this is, you're talking about last week it was about $60 million a day of sell pressure. That's now cut in half to $30 million a day. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about a $1 trillion market. So it's very, very small. So I think if anything, it's going to be the psychological impact of it and the fact that we're all saying, hey, look at this 4-year cycle that we have out there. Probably what's more important, though, is when you get to see some of these bigger brokerage firms come online. So Morgan Stanley, UBS, once they are online and they can have their customers start come into Bitcoin, that's a lot of pent up demand.
What about with the ETFs? How does that change the game now? Because last halving, we didn't have ETFs.
That's right. And I think actually it changes tremendously. That's why Morgan Stanley and UBS are so important, because up to this point, they have not been able to buy those ETFs. Their clients have been able to buy it. So if you think about it, you now have an asset with the most demand it's ever going to have, right? You've got all these people just able to come on, and supply has been cut. Coins on exchange are down. So you're having a whole bunch of pent up and potential demand hitting lower supply. To me, that's the bullish setup for Bitcoin.
We had a segment on earlier where we were talking about gold. Do you think Bitcoin will ever be a safe haven type asset?
I think eventually it could be, but I think we're talking 10 to 20 years down the road.
Okay.
I mean, this is really, it is still in the early stages of acceleration here.
What did geopolitics, what kind of impact does that have on the price of Bitcoin?
So it's had a positive impact until the last weekend, frankly, right? So Bitcoin was correlated very highly with gold. Anytime you'd have a geopolitical hiccup, you'd see Bitcoin catch a bid. Although over the weekend, when we saw the Israel-Iran attacks, we saw Bitcoin dump. And I think it's kind of trying to figure out what its personality is his. And as it gets more ingrained into the financial system and there's more different type of traders, it's going to start to get correlated to other markets.
It's interesting. It's great to have you on. My best to Brian Kelly, by the way. But one would have thought, I would have thought, it's traded extraordinarily well. But as the amount of Fed rate cuts continues to come down, and maybe they're getting religion, should it be trading better or should it be trading worse? That's really what I'm trying to struggle with here. I mean, you can make an argument either way.
You could make an argument either way. I'll give you my argument on this. I think the Fed has told us that they're going to tolerate higher levels of inflation to reduce the debt to GDP. What does that mean? That means that your buying power in your currency is going to go down. So your groceries are going up. You're just not going to have as much buying power. So to me, even if the Fed says, hey, as long as the Fed says we're not going to raise rates to 10% and really crush inflation, I think Bitcoin does well in the two scenarios that we're talking about, an even Fed or Fed rate cuts.
Beeks, what are some other ways that, you know, some folks, I mean, now that these Bitcoin spot ETFs, that you can get that sort of exposure, you can buy it on IRA if you want to, that sort of thing. What are some other ways that you're thinking about playing this? If you do take that 10 to 20 year view that it's going to be this ecosystem that's created, other than the ETF, other than buying Bitcoin straight out, what are some other things that, you know, viewers should look at?
Yeah, so I would look at some of the other coins. So that would be Ethereum. One, Ethereum and Solana are probably the two that you could buy this cycle. Because those are going to be the ones that the new financial system's built on top of. So decentralized finance, you've heard about DeFi. Those are the two that are really in the lead for building that. You could also look towards the miners on that as well. Although the mining's a rough business. I mean, there's a lot of capital expenditure. You have to worry about electricity. But that's another way to kind of play the ecosystem.
Fascinating stuff. Brian Kelly, thanks so much. It's great to see you again. It's been a while
since
I've
been
able to see you in person officially. Courtney, do you think that Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, have a place in everybody's portfolio these days?
We don't have any exposure to this in our portfolio. Okay. I mean, I have investors who do this like kind of speculative on the side, because like our take, at least for long-term investors, is there's really no use case for it. I can't buy anything with it. It doesn't pay a dividend. It doesn't have earnings. So the only way to really make money is if somebody else is going to buy it for you at a higher price in the future, which clearly is happening. But it really is speculative in our mind. So it is a spec play. That's fine. As part of your long-term strategy, it's not something I play in.
I'm still trying to figure it out. Carter, do the charts make any sense? Can you find patterns in these?
Oh, sure.
Charts?
I mean, anything that's traded, the pattern typically repeats. So what we know is, of course, it was basically in 2021 in November, it was where it is now. It dropped 80%, and we've just now recovered to that former high of November of 2021. We're consolidating there, and the presumption is after you contend with a former high, you exceed it.
It's fascinating. Still trying to figure it out, but I learn more every time I come on this show. Coming up next, it's already time for your final trades. We'll be right back.
It's time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Carter, you get to kick us off.
Sure. XBI, that's the spider biotech ETF, now down 20% from its intermediate high. Buy for a bounce.
And Courtney?
We've talked a lot about commodities. We haven't talked about steel. I think U.S. steel is something that you want to make sure you're in at the moment.
And that is X. Dan?
If Carter thinks that Schwab's breaking out, then I think you play the hood in sympathy.
And Mr. Adami.
Great having you, Courtney. What is Knicks game tonight? What are your thoughts quickly?
Oh, Knicks are going to blow it out, man. It's going to do great.
Man. Yeah. Macy's should be trading at least $23, letter M.
Thank you for watching Fast Money. It was great to have you. Mad Money with Jim Cramer, though, starts right now. Stick around for that.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.